The Lord has a way of bringing about His great purposes, even with a poor, illegitimate orphan boy living in poverty on a small island in the British West Indies. Alexander Hamilton grew up amid the sparkling turquoise waters of the Caribbean Sea, though it was anything but paradise for him. He was born to unmarried parents, casting on him the stigma of illegitimacy that would follow him throughout his life. When Alexander was young, his merchant father abandoned the family, leaving Alexander's mother to care for two sons. He and his brother James, who was 2 years older, helped their mother run a store where Alexander kept track of income and inventory. It was his first experience with money, commerce, and trade. When the brothers weren't working, they roamed the tropical beaches and observed pirates sentenced to hang at the bay gallows. They witnessed unspeakable brutality towards slaves and the inhumane conditions in which they were forced to work. The horrors Alexander witnessed toward the slaves would cause him to become a fierce abolitionist as an adult. When Alexander was 13, a yellow fever epidemic struck the island, and his mother contracted it and died. Because the two brothers were labeled illegitimate, everything their mother owned was taken and sold. They were destitute, orphaned, without a penny to their names. The sting of injustice at their situation, due only to their circumstances at birth, was felt deeply by Alexander. He realized then that he would have to work harder and smarter than most to make something of himself. The brothers did not waste time finding employment. Though they inherited no material wealth, their mother had trained them in the habit of hard work. James became an apprentice to a carpenter with whom he went to live, and Alexander was hired as a clerk to a New York merchant, Nicholas Kruger. When Kruger fell ill and stayed in New York, he left Alexander, only 16 years old, in charge of his St. Croix office. The wealthy Kruger family was impressed at how well the youth managed the business. It was a valuable learning experience for young Alexander. He learned not only the ins and outs of international trade and shipping, but also the value of credit and uniform currency. Alexander was tutored by a Presbyterian minister, Reverend Hugh Knox. In addition to spiritual matters and Bible study, Alexander was taught literature, science, history, Greek mythology, and more. He loved to read. Often, after work, he spent hours poring over the books of Reverend Knox's vast library. He also wrote letters and poetry on occasion for the local newspaper. Alexander had a hunger to be important, to be a hero. He longed for fame. He wished for a war so that he could fight and gain honor on the battlefield. His deliverance from obscurity finally came not through a battle, but through a monstrous storm. The fierce hurricane caused massive destruction on the island, which Alexander described in raw and striking detail in a letter to his father, with whom he had reconnected. He also eloquently depicted the stirrings of emotions the storm caused in himself. "He who gave the winds to blow and the lightnings to rage, even him have I always loved and served. His precepts have I observed, his commandments have I obeyed, and his perfections have I adored. He will snatch me from ruin. Rejoice at thy deliverance and humble thyself in the presence of thy deliverer." Reverend Knox thought so much of the letter that he had it published in a newspaper. Indeed, the young writer was delivered, or should I say, snatched from ruin. Alexander's skill of expression impressed several wealthy men who read it, including Kruger. They donated money to a fund set up by Reverend Knox, enabling the promising young writer to go to college and build on his talents. They hoped he might become a doctor and return to practice medicine on the island. However, Alexander was happy to leave behind the plights of his youth. He never again returned to the islands. The young immigrant lived with an attorney friend of Kruger's Elias Bodineau, a wealthy New Jersey man influential in politics. Alexander was not fully prepared to enter college, as he had had no Latin or Greek and his math was lacking. He spent a year in a school founded by Bodineau, who also introduced him to other influential patriots such as William Livingston and John Jay. Alexander and Bodineau became lifelong friends. Alexander decided upon King's College in New York City. All through college, he vigorously supported the preservation of the American colonies' liberties, writing and publishing numerous essays and pamphlets, including an article defending the destruction of tea during the Boston Tea Party. People could hardly believe they were the work of such a young student. At 19 years old, he gave an impassioned speech in front of a large group of patriots opposing the long-time oppression of their rights by the British. Many were taking note of the intelligent, passionate young Hamilton. As tensions between the colonies and Great Britain intensified, Alexander and many of his college classmates joined a volunteer militia called the Corsicans. Wearing leather caps stitched with the words, "Liberty or Death," every morning they attended drills before classes. One night in August 1775, the Corsicans received orders to raid the battery. They managed to move 10 cannons to safety under British fire. In 1776, Alexander was placed at the head of an artillery company. He trained his 68 men well, which gained the notice of senior officers. During the Continental Army's retreat from General Cornwallis, Alexander's men aided the escape from New York to New Jersey. George Washington was impressed by the young commander and the admirable skill displayed by Hamilton, who directed a battery against the enemy's advanced columns. Hamilton and his men proved a valiant aid to Washington's army in the blustery, freezing, victorious battles at Trenton and Princeton at the end of 1776. A cannonball was shot into a brick building to scare out the British hiding inside. It blasted a hole through a painting of King George II, taking off his royal head. Some say it was Hamilton who shot that cannon. Within weeks of those raids, General Washington asked Alexander Hamilton to be one of his personal aides, offering him the rank of lieutenant colonel. The young artillery captain accepted. It had been only 5 years since he had sailed across the ocean as a 17-year-old orphan, his future uncertain. He took care of Washington's most important correspondence, writing letters to Congress, to governors, and to Washington's generals. Alexander quickly became Washington's most valuable aide and advisor. Hamilton served as Washington's aide-de-camp for 4 years, but he was anxious to engage in combat himself and win the glory that came with it. He was frustrated that Congress could not come up with the funds to supply the troops with decent supplies, as simple as food and clothing. He believed the government of the Articles of Confederation had inadequate power to help the people and to bolster the military. He didn't believe it was strong enough to uphold a new nation. Alexander began writing to a powerful man he knew, campaigning for a change. Though Hamilton worked tirelessly during this time, a certain young woman brought sparks of happiness when she came to camp with her father, General Schuyler. Eliza helped in the hospital tents, sewing and dressing the wounds of suffering soldiers. She and Alexander fell quickly in love and were married that year in December 1780. George Washington held a reception in their honor. The following April, Hamilton and Washington quarreled, and the faithful aide decided it was time to leave Washington's side. Washington had refused to give him command of an army, so Hamilton spent the summer writing a series of anonymous essays for the newspaper The Continentalist. He had witnessed the suffering of soldiers due to the lack of power in Congress, so in his articles, he argued for a stronger national government that would have the power to tax and conduct trade. By late summer 1781, Washington needed all the help he could get for the war effort. He finally gave Hamilton what he wanted, command of an army, a New York regiment. In October, Hamilton's unit made a surprise attack on British soldiers in Yorktown, Alexander leading the charge. With his sword raised and his 400 men with their bayonets storming behind him, Alexander was the first to enter the enemy's fort untouched by the heavy British fire. It was one of several victories that led to the surrender of Cornwallis 5 days later and the end of the American War for Independence. Hamilton's wife Eliza gave birth to their first child, Philip, just a few months after the end of the war. Hamilton was a proud, happy father, writing that he longed for nothing but the company of my wife and my baby. He decided to become a lawyer, passing the bar exam a mere 5 months later. Hamilton had made quite a name for himself and was asked to be a member of the Continental Congress. He ultimately agreed, feeling the need to further help his struggling nation. But after less than a year in Congress, Hamilton resigned, frustrated with their inability to get things done efficiently. He returned to his family in Albany and focused on his law practice, but he also continued to call for a national constitution. He helped establish the Bank of New York, helped form an anti-slavery organization, and called for an end to the American slave trade. During this time, he and Eliza cared for their growing family, eventually having 9 children, including one they adopted. Hamilton's law practice flourished, making him very wealthy. In May 1787, Hamilton went to Philadelphia, having been named as a New York delegate to the Constitutional Convention. When the Constitution was finally written and ready to be ratified, Hamilton set to work with John Jay and James Madison, writing the Federalist Papers. Hamilton tirelessly wrote 2/3 of the 85 essays, usually by candlelight, while continuing his law practice by day. These essays argued that the new Constitution would not only strengthen the federal government, but also create a more perfect union of the states. His essays and passionate speeches in New York were the push his adopted state needed to finally ratify the Constitution. When George Washington was elected president, he appointed Alexander Hamilton Secretary of the Treasury. Hamilton took a significant pay cut, but he was willing to make the sacrifice in order to serve his country. He developed an economic plan for the government in 3 short months. He worked to stabilize the country's currency and pay off debt. He helped establish a national mint and currency. He promoted factories and industry, opposing Jefferson, who thought most people should remain farmers. He proposed a system of roads and canals. When Aaron Burr was made vice president in 1800, Hamilton spoke out frequently against Burr, whose political ambitions Hamilton distrusted. When Burr ran for governor of New York, Hamilton published articles publicly criticizing him. Burr lost and blamed Hamilton, challenging him to a duel. Hamilton told several friends he had no intention of shooting Burr. "I have resolved to reserve and throw away my first fire, and I have thoughts even of reserving my second fire," and thus giving a double opportunity to Colonel Burr to pause and to reflect. Unfortunately, Burr, with no intention to pause or reflect, fatally shot Hamilton. He lived for 31 hours before dying, surrounded by his grieving wife and children. Before the duel, he had written a letter for Eliza, which read, in part, "This letter, my very dear Eliza, will not be delivered to you unless I shall first have terminated my earthly career, to begin, as I humbly hope from redeeming grace and divine mercy, a happy immortality. Fly to the bosom of your God and be comforted. With my last idea, I shall cherish the sweet hope of meeting you in a better world. Adieu, best of wives and best of women. Embrace all my darling children for me. Ever yours, A.H. Alexander Hamilton wrote enough in his lifetime to fill approximately 32 volumes, or 22,000 pages. It was his writing, in fact, this very gift from God, that proved to be his deliverance from an island, from shame, and from obscurity. It was his writing that would make him a leader, a founding father, who through his gift of writing helped build and shape a nation. My dear ones, I have left for you a $10 bill on which Alexander Hamilton, the man who built the nation's financial system, will forever be honored. Whenever you find yourself in a plight, such as this great man did on many occasions, remember the writing behind his picture, "In God We Trust." Trust the author of life, and remember the sacrifices made for freedom. The sacred rights of mankind are not to be rummaged for among old parchments and musty records. They are written as with a sunbeam in the whole volume of human nature, by the hand of divinity itself, and can never be erased or obscured by mortal power. Alexander Hamilton.